Welcome to the Maria Heller Show, on the net since 2000 and still going strong. If you feel like you're not getting the real news, if you feel like you're not connected spiritually, you have found your home. Maria covers a wide range of topics as only a snarky New Yorker can. Straight up, no chaser. No censorship, no corporate sponsors, thus true freedom of speech. Your subscription gives you unlimited access as a member of the smartest audience on earth. Relax and enjoy the education. Now here's Maria.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Welcome to The Bigger Picture with my guest, my co-host, my friend, Michael Rakia. We're going to be talking about everything, including his latest book, The Spaces Between, Unseen Forces That Shape Your Life. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Maria. Great to be back with you in these crazy times.
Crazy indeed. Talk about unseen forces. They refer to this virus as an invisible enemy.
Yeah. The trouble is we're whipping up so much fear and panic that we are projecting onto the virus more of what we expect from it. We expect it to be deadly, and therefore it is.
Right.
But we are reinforcing it. The real monster that's stalking the streets and the cities and the towns is fear and panic. And our news agencies are doing a wonderful job of whipping up that fear and that panic.
I totally agree. I mean, I know that Boris Johnson is in the hospital, or at least he was yesterday, in intensive care.
Yes, he's still there, yeah.
Unlike America, you don't have a vice president, so I know he nominated somebody to run the government while he's out, even though I doubt he really runs the government. I'm still sure it's the Queen. What's the situation like in the UK right now?
Well, it's hard to tell because we're locked in. We are allowed one walk of up to an hour a day. Social distancing is in effect in that you have to stand 2 meters from anyone that you meet on your walk. And you can only go out for medical emergencies or to get drugs. And for your exercise. And that's it, really. And we've had 2 weeks of this thus far.
Well, we've had a month of it already, and it looks like we have another month. It looks like we have another month of it here. What's the situation with food there?
Fine. There was panic buying at the beginning, but people seem to have settled down. You've got to keep your distance in supermarkets, of course, but food supply seems normal, really.
Well, that's a good thing. I mean, we had the same situation here, but I've noticed there's a lot less panic right now. You know, going through all of this and looking at people's reaction and paranoia and fear, as you said, I will tell you this. The first thing that came to my mind was one of your early books, Your Life After Death. I want to tell you why. I think that for a lot of people, and I've said this to so many people, for a lot of people, I think their fear is because they have a strong fear of death because their spirituality is not intact. They don't have true spiritual understanding.
And that's the missing element from all aspects of society at the moment. We haven't received a lot of advice, if any, from our spiritual leaders here, except to say, keep your distance from the people around you and don't spread the virus. Now, what about the spiritual support that we need? What about the spiritual aspect that we need? And what about being able to tackle the challenge of the situation by bringing light from within our heart centers into the world? Joseph has said this for 13 to 15 years now, that it is the only lasting solution. And you hit the nail on the head by saying that people are not aware of their own spirituality. They are not aware of their own spirituality in any aspect of life. We are just living life on a materialistic level only. And you're quite right that they're absolutely terrified of dying. The people that you meet on your one walk a day split into two camps. There are those who are very friendly and say hello, and that's great.
Right.
And then there are those who will not look at you. They will not talk to you. And as far as I know, Maria, you cannot spread a disease by eye contact.
Well, I find the same thing because here in the States, you know, for me, my gym is closed. That's like the worst thing that could ever happen to me. So,
yes, of course.
So we have a lake in my town, and my granddaughter and I go walking around the lake a few times because at least we can get some cardio in. And I will agree, but I will say the majority of people are friendlier now than they were before.
Yes.
That you can't pass somebody without them smiling at you, nodding their head, giving you a wave. And of course, they're keeping their distance. But I guess it's just up to the individual. Are you going to let the fear of this cripple you as a human being and as a god within? Right.
Yeah. Or if you do, then you're already gone. You've already died inside.
Exactly.
If you lose your humanity, you have already died inside.
I totally agree. And, you know, I make a point of saying hello to people. I make a point of talking to them. Even in the grocery store, you know, I got a booming voice, so I don't have to stand close to people. But we need to let each other know that you're not alone in this. And, you know, the most serious thing of this, you know, here in the States, there's an uptick in suicides. People are actually committing suicide and murdering their families instead of the fear of getting the virus.
Because isolation is not our natural state. We are all one being. We are all part of the divine. We are all part of each other. And to isolate us is perhaps not the wisest choice. I understand why that choice has been made, but it doesn't help. I mean, I have a friend whose mother has dementia, and he doesn't know whether he will ever see her again because he can't visit her. And we are abandoning aspects of our humanity. Mm-hmm. We have to be sensible in this as well as to tackle the virus. And so we have to disconnect to the point where, as you say, people are going mad or committing suicide. There is domestic violence. And the ramifications of this, once the virus has dissipated, will take years to sort out. People will be maladjusted. They will need counseling. They will need loving. They will need connecting. And none of those things are being given to them at this time.
No, they're just getting a reminder of fear every day. You know, you're lucky to be in the UK, because here in the United States, every single day, we have the president on television giving people misinformation, more lies, and more fear, to the point where certain TV stations now are refusing to cover his press conferences because it's useless information. It's bad information. And, you know, listen, I live my whole life without ever thinking about the President of the United States every single day of my life up until this. And it's like, oh, God, this is worse than isolation. But, you know, I go back to, you know, the fear of death. And I want to tell you a story. You know, my I had an uncle when I was a young girl, Uncle Sal, and he had a heart attack when he was about 50. After he had that heart attack, he would not leave his apartment. He wouldn't even get in the car to go visit his own children. He just wouldn't leave his apartment because he was afraid that if he did and he had another heart attack, he would die. And I remember, God, I couldn't have been more than 20 years old. And I was visiting him. And when he was telling me this and showing me all his fear, I said to him, but then you're dead already.
Yeah.
You know, if you're afraid to live life in the moment, in the day, which is all any of us have, you know, any guarantee you have is just today, you're already dead. So most people that are fearing death have never really lived either.
Absolutely. And there is something we can do. I mean, we're sat in our houses. We have time on our hands. If we want to do something spiritually that actually makes a difference, we can sit in meditation and in unison, and we can send out light and love into the world. And people think, well, that's a vague, nebulous thing to do. It isn't. It's what we've been told to do down the ages by all the seers, all the advanced spiritual teachers. And look what happens when we don't do it. We've had decades and decades and decades of materialism, and we've reached this point. And I'm not saying that anyone has sent this virus, but I'm sure that it's being used as an opportunity to put a shot across our bows and to say, look how you're acting. Here's another chance to act differently. please act differently. If you put the spiritual work in, the spiritual light in, you will turn this around. But you, each of you, have to realize that you are a spirit. You, each of you, have to realize that you are connected to the God within. And you, each of you, have to realize that you are a creative being. And you decide, no one else, how this world is. And en masse at the moment, you are deciding that this world is a place to be feared. You are deciding that this virus will kill you. You are deciding that you can't go out, you can't connect, that everybody is your enemy. And you are reinforcing and creating that on a daily basis. What Joseph is saying, what we are saying, is that it's just as easy to put in the time to create a different vision of the earth, to create harmony and to restore the balance by putting into the earth what is missing from the earth. And the earth is a battery with no charge in it at the moment. We've been running on the energy from the field of human consciousness, and we have drained the earth of its power and its energy. We need to recharge that battery, and we need to recharge our spiritual batteries, each of us, to recognize the God in each of us, and the as we look at each other, to see not an enemy, but somebody to be loved, that is part of us, that is part of the universe, and to restore harmony. Once we restore harmony, this will pass, but not until.
Right, right. Well, I understand that you have a 3 times a week prayer thing going on. Do you want to explain that?
Yeah, I was urged by Joseph and the Soul Group to organize, to get together our Facebook friends and our website friends to join with us at 4 times during the day on Mondays, Wednesdays and Fridays to send unconditional light into the world, to sit wherever they are in self-isolation, to reach inwards to that point that we have within our heart centers, and to channel that light out, united, not just to each other and the God within, but to the soul groups that are concerned about us, and to send that light into the world, to love the world better, to love and lighten the situation around us. And the amount of energy, the amount of power you can feel. You might be disconnected from people physically, but you're never alone spiritually. And there's a tremendous amount of power generated. And so we're doing that at 9, 1, 5 and 9 UK time. The equivalent times, Eastern Standard Time, are on our website. And we do it for 15 minutes, 4 times a day, 3 days a week.
Right.
And we want more and more and more people to join. Because the more people we have, the more spirits we have, the more energy we have, the more we can change things here. And we are practically doing something from a spiritual viewpoint.
Well, I think that's an excellent idea. So what do you think about sending light to the virus itself?
I think it's an excellent idea, Maria, an excellent idea. Now, that will seem alien to some people, to actually send love to the virus. But you see, if we treat it as an enemy in our prayers, in our light sending, then we are creating that which we expect from it. And if we send light to it, we are acknowledging the higher aspects of it, the aspects of it that can do us no harm. As in any situation, if you send light to that situation, you are acknowledging only the highest aspects, the noblest aspects of it. And so, yeah, send light to the virus. Love the virus. Love the, take away the fear, take away the panic. In fact, send light to the fear and the panic, because we have given the fear and the panic personalities.
Right.
We have made them into thought forms. As I say, they are roaming our streets, and they are far more dangerous than the virus. We need to send love to the fear, love to the panic, love to the virus, love and light to each other and to the planet. You know, there's a remarkable thing happening, Maria, at the moment. You can hear the earth repairing itself.
You can see the earth repairing.
Which, of course,
you can
you
see
are.
It.
You, right. You must have noticed that there's a quietness, and you can feel and see and hear the earth taking this opportunity when we are not polluting it, when we are not destroying it, to repair itself. And apparently, here, our pollution levels have gone down by 60%.
I know. I was watching videos on YouTube last night of different cities around the world, before and after pictures of the smog in the air. It's a good reminder of the beautiful planet that we decided to come to and how beautiful it was and still can be. You know, I'm sure you've seen the animals roaming through the streets. You know, the freedom that animals have. You know, I watched this great little video of otters that were able to come out of the water and actually play where there's normally tons of visitors and tourists. So, you know, two pandas who, you know, they've been trying forever to get to reproduce in a zoo. Now with no people in the zoo, they got video of the pandas making love and having sex to have babies. The animal kingdom is surely much happier right now.
Yes, and the earth is repairing itself, and the animal kingdom is repairing itself with rapidity. It's only taken a few days.
I know.
And it just shows how quickly this planet would come back to the paradise that it once was if we would stop plundering and destroying it. So there are, we have to look at the opportunities in this challenge as well. And there are opportunities. Mm-hmm. There are opportunities, as you've said earlier, to get to know ourselves, to get to know what we are, and to perhaps research life after death, to look at the evidence for life after death, to look at the reports of life after death, and to understand something of what we are, to take away the fear. As you said, we're all on a one-way street. Whether we die this next minute or in 50 years' time, that's where we're going.
Right.
You might be able to protect yourself for a couple of weeks, but you can't forever. And if it's not the virus, it will be something else eventually, if only old age. We are going in the same direction. And there is nothing to be frightened of. It's here where we should be frightened because of the way that we're running the place.
Exactly. Well, people are also realizing that materialism isn't everything they believed it was. You know, they're realizing how much less they can do without. A lot of people realize that, oh, I didn't really have to drive to my job. I could have stayed home and worked at home on my computer. People are learning how to cook again. You know, every now and then I'll post a good Italian recipe on Facebook. For people that don't know how to cook, I'll post something, you know, very easy to make that's also very nutritious. You know, people are either going to pull together right now or they're going to pull apart.
Yes, we are. I think we said in an earlier show this year, didn't we, that it is a deciding year, and we're on the seesaw. We're on the balance at the moment. Which way will it fall? Well, it depends what we put into the equation, and that spiritual help is desperate, and awareness are desperately needed at this time. Are desperately needed. That's the way we should be living our lives anyway. Mm-hmm. And my hope is that when things get back to normal, or what passes for normal after all this, that people will retain that spiritual viewpoint. It's no good coming through this and then thinking, oh, we're back to normal. We can go for the next car. We can go for the next holiday. We'll never consider death until it stares us in the face. No, no, no. Let's get to a spiritual viewpoint. That's where we started long ago. And it's what we have to get back to if we're ever going to repopulate this planet properly, in harmony, and live in harmony with the animal forms and live in harmony with the planet itself and with each other.
Well, hopefully people are learning a lot through this. You know, I have people call me, I'm bored on what to do. My answer is always the same, Michael. I tell them, read a book. Okay.
Absolutely.
But, you know, reading books is so old-fashioned to so many people. But this is a good time for everybody to actually start reading all your books. Okay. Because, you know, I've read them all, a couple of them a few times. And, of course, after reading your work and my own knowledge that I've had since I was 4 years old, I've never really understood why people are so afraid to die. And why they cling to this planet so much, because everybody's got the same problems. You know, this is a planet where if you don't have money, you really don't have a life. And I don't think there are other planets where money is a necessity to enjoy the beauty of your own planet.
No, we create. I mean, we created this world as part of the God that we really are, as the angelic beings that we really are. We originally created this world so that as the angelic beings that we are, we could come to this world and experience and add to our experience and therefore add to the experiences of the angelic host and ultimately add to the experience of the Godhead. It wasn't meant to be like this, and as you say, it's not like this on other planets.
Right.
Each planet is a jewel to be visited, to be treasured, to be honored, to move through, and then to take that experience back into the greater experience. That's what the planets are for. That's what the stars are for. That's what we are about. But we've encapsulated ourselves, as we know from the fall, in this mistaken view of how society should be, of how existence should be, and we have worshipped everything except what we really are.
Right.
We have excluded the God within from everything, you know, that the car is our God, the holidays have been our God, the food is our God, the money is our God, above all else, the money is our God, and none of this at this time has any meaning whatsoever.
None of it, absolutely.
Any meaning whatsoever. We've been stripped from all the things that separate us from what we truly are. So there is a golden opportunity to spend, if people are saying they're bored, spend some time, as you say, reading, and I've read all my life, and I can't read online, I have to read an actual physical book.
Me too.
But they can also spend time learning to become quiet, learning to enjoy that silence that they find themselves in, and learning to connect to their inner vision, their inner senses, those senses that will prove to them that there is a life after death. They don't have to go to me or to you or to anyone. They have to go within and sharpen those senses and ask. And they will connect and they will feel that feeling of peace and permanence come over them. And they will know for sure that they are spiritual beings and that there is no end to life. There is no death. There's only a transition. You know,
right.
This is one journey. At the end of the journey, we go on another journey, and then there's another journey and another journey. So there's nothing to be frightened of.
Right.
But to live our lives in this way is less than life at the moment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I also remind people several times a day, never come back here. Never come back. So
no.
I don't know how many times I've said that since I've read your books. But it starts a good conversation because there are a lot of people, Michael, who believe reincarnation is a really good thing. And I say, no, reincarnation is a trap. It's a trap of this planet. And, you know, and you can't be like, you know, people that have read their Bible. You think about who the hell was it? Was it Saul's wife who turned around and turned into salt? Because, you know, she turned around and, you know, she, even though they were fleeing for their lives, going to a better place, while, you know, Sodom and Gomorrah is being destroyed, she turned around worried about her friends, worried about her things, worried about her home, and boom, it cost her life. So when we're exiting this planet, the only thought you need to have on your mind is never come back.
Never come back. And to also understand that reincarnation is not forced upon you. It is forced upon you by no one else but yourself. We have free will. Free will is a constant in the universe. We come back because we are drawn back, because our experiences draw us back, and also because we haven't investigated what lies ahead of us. So that when we pass from this world and are about to go into the next stage of our existence, we're not prepared for that. We know nothing of it. It's frightening. It's not as appealing as coming back here for another life, another experience. You know, whatever it is that we come back for, that looks more appealing to us than the bliss that lies ahead for us because we haven't investigated. We haven't learned. We haven't dared to look beyond physical death. That's another great fear, isn't it? It's not just the current fear. There's the current fear, and then the fear that we have all our lives. Oh, we'll not mention death. Oh, no, don't mention death. You'll offend somebody. Don't look at it. Don't consider it. Don't think how much time have you got left here. Don't do any of that. And, of course, we should be doing exactly the opposite. We should be investigating what comes next. Through our own experiences, through tuning into our spiritual selves, through literature on the subject, and building up a picture for ourselves, and that picture will take away the fear.
Right.
But we're living in the shadow of so much fear at the moment. It's a terrible, terrible thing. If only we could get rid of that fear. But the only way to get rid of the fear is to face it. Exactly. And you face it by becoming quiet, by linking to the God within, and by examining what is going to happen to you, considering what is going to happen to you, asking to be shown what will happen to you. And all those things take the fear away and replace them with a certainty and a confidence and a peace and a harmony. And that's a great way to approach life.
Right. Well, you know, there's another interesting thing I wanted to talk to you about, because we've talked about it before, where you said that, you know, it's getting harder and harder for Joseph to come through, for spirits to come through, because the field was getting so weak and so dense. The negativity was so dense. And I have to tell you this, because this came out of the mouth of my granddaughter, okay? She said, all of a sudden, since this shutdown happened, she's dreaming again. She's able to go out of body while she sleeps. She's able, even my daughter got a message yesterday, and it freaked my daughter out, because she's not as aware as my granddaughter and I am. But it seems that it's easier even to cut through the veil right now because of less pollution, noise pollution, fear pollution, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, absolutely it is. It is easier for them to get through. And with so many people meditating on the light, there is the connective power for them to get through as well. That there is peace, and you're right. You must feel more peaceful of yourself. I certainly do.
I do.
I feel peaceful about the situation, but that there is a greater peace to me personally than there has been for many years. And for many months, I've known that this was coming up, as I'm sure you have. And it has been manifest, and I've thought there's something going to happen. There is something going to happen. We're heading for cataclysm.
Right.
And of course, it's manifesting itself. It's not cataclysm. We can get through this. We can change this. But it is a warning, and we should look at it not just as an enemy, because it isn't an enemy in reality, but as a warning.
Right.
What is this teaching us? It's teaching us that we are not the all-powerful beings materially that we believe ourselves to be, that we can do anything and there are no consequences.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to find our inner voice and we have to find our outer voice. And when this is over, we have to be strong enough to say, no, I don't agree with this. This is my life. This is my existence. You cannot treat me in this way. And we have to do that. We have to voice when something is wrong. Not be herded around like sheep. We have to say, this is wrong. From a spiritual viewpoint, from a material viewpoint, this is wrong. No more, no further.
Right. Well, you know, you're right about expecting the other shoe was going to drop. And it's interesting because my son was visiting, I would say, over a month ago. And, you know, his life's going good. We were having a happy visit, blah, blah, blah. And out of the blue, while he's sitting on the sofa, he just looked at me and he says, Ma, something terrible is coming. I just feel it. And, you know, of course, he reminded me of that a month later when we were in the middle of all this madness. And I'm not surprised because he's always had that. And a lot of people, you know, but when you have young people, who are also, you know, and here's the other thing. So many people going out of body during their sleep time that they don't want to come back. And when they do come back, a few of them say they feel like they were hurtled back here. Like it was just like they were slammed back into their bodies.
Yes, yes. Of course, when the physical body awakens, we're pulled back fairly quickly, very quickly.
Right.
And we each have a certain arc of energy that we have to go through. But it is difficult. And there are times when you think, oh my goodness, it's so nice on the other side. I'd much rather be there. Now, I'm not advocating to anyone that they should be there.
Right.
We're supposed to live this life. But I am saying that there is, if people could experience what we have experienced about the next existence, they wouldn't be frightened at all. They would be thinking, oh my goodness, that's wonderful. This is something to look forward to.
Right.
This is love and peace and bliss and creativity to the extent that I've never known in my physical life. What am I being afraid of?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what people should be reaching for, that knowledge.
Right.
And as we've said, there's an opportunity to get it at the moment.
Right. And, you know, a few of my clients that I've talked to this past week, and I'm sure some of our listeners also may be having the same experience. That's why we're having this discussion today. A lot of them are in their dream space in a different house with different people, and they know it's not here. But they're asking me to interpret their dreams. And for me, it's like, you're just visiting your other life spaces. You know, this isn't the only life you can lead at one time. And, you know, there's your home and your other friends and families on different planes of existence that are still available to you. And they're, for the most part, they're all extremely pleasant visits.
It's only this one that isn't.
Michael, we need to take a short break. Stay with us. Mike and I will be right back.
Hi, this is Monica Sepulveda of Wake Up with Maria and Monica. You can hear us every second Tuesday of the month. We offer you solutions and tools to help raise your own vibratory frequency. And as we stay in this light of love, we shift ourselves and the planet shifts by itself. No reason to react to the negativity that's going on this planet when we're all so powerful. So why not use it every morning when you wake up? Actually, I'm doing this promotion for selfish reasons. I just got to tell you that Maria is probably the best. No, I know. She's the best intuitive reader I have ever met in my life, and she's underpaid. I mean, check out her prices and check out mine. There's differences. Yeah, I know what I'm doing. I'm a medium. I contact people who've passed on. But this woman is incredibly accurate with her predictions. I've never met anybody so gifted. She's so wonderful as a friend, and I'm humbled to be on her show. Thank you so much, Maria. Sorry I had to plug you here, but I just have to brag about you. You're that good. Take care, everyone, and make it a great day. Bye.
Okay, welcome back to The Bigger Picture with myself and Michael Rakia. Get over to josephspeaks.com. Buy every book there while you're sitting home doing nothing. Get your spiritual metal up. And when I see fear, I know immediately, Michael, it's their lack of spiritual understanding. You know, they want to trust their governments. They want to trust their preachers, their rabbis, you know, whatever. They want someone else to fix their life. Well, there's no hero coming to save us. We are it.
Yes, we are. But that gives us great power. And it's a wonderful gift to be given that we are in charge of ourselves. And we can organize and change things. We just don't believe we can. And we're told by society that we should be led by what society tells us to do. We should be taking precautions against the virus, but we should be balancing that and in parallel with that, using our spiritual facilities and drawing on our spiritual facilities, which are stronger than our materialistic ones, and bringing that spiritual knowledge to bear. We are batteries. Each of us is a battery for the light. We charge up with light energy if we do it right, if we go to our heart centers. Now, the more batteries you have in a toy or in an appliance, the more power there is for that appliance.
Right.
So imagine how powerful we are when all those batteries join together to create light. And that's what we should be doing at this time. And you, as we said earlier, you don't need to be in physical contact with someone to do that. Mm. You can link with them spiritually, and you're free as a spirit. But the fact that people go, as you said, are going to other experiences at night during their sleep time shows them that they are not imprisoned by their material selves, by their physical selves. Mm. And we can travel mentally, we can travel spiritually, we can connect with people, and we can make a difference. And boy, do we need to make a difference.
And we need to make it pretty quick.
Because, yes, we do. Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
when
we
you...
are, I mean, I'm not... I don't think for a moment that the end of the world is next Tuesday at 3:30 in the afternoon. But I think we're relatively speaking quite close to the breakdown, total breakdown, and perhaps annihilation of society if we don't change our ways. And that's not a judgment. It's just saying that we are coming from the wrong place. All we have to do is flip that switch and start to come from the right place, which is a viewpoint, a core of spiritual knowledge. And it changes everything.
Absolutely. You know, it's interesting because I put a post up on my readings page on Facebook today. And it was a very simple post. It just said, ask yourself, is this coming from fear or love? If it's coming from fear, don't do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that, you know, that's for all day long, you know, whatever it is you're doing. You know, when you were talking about death being transition, you know, people need to stop and think when you're in the womb, you know, at least while the body's forming, and that baby is born, that's a transition. They don't know what the hell's going to happen. And the first thing they're greeted with is a smack across the ass. So
absolutely. And that sort of symbolizes the whole experience that they'll have whilst they're here.
Right. It'll move from your sort of, it'll move from your ass to your face.
Yes, yes, yeah.
So, yeah, you know, yeah, luckily when you leave this planet, there's nobody to smack you in the ass on the other side. You know, it's just going to be you and your past life reviews. So have fun doing that.
Yeah, you and your, yep. Yeah, I always think that's going to be fun. I'll be sat there with my tub of popcorn and my fizzy drink, and I'll be hiding my head in my hands and thinking, oh my goodness. But of course, the life review is not a judgment. It is a review that enables us to establish where we are with regard to how we've built up, elevated our spiritual vibrations, and then to determine where we want to go to next and how we want to get there. What's the best path to get there? So a life review is not a judgment. I mean, we watch that film as a metaphor. It's nobody else is watching it. We watch it. Mm-hmm. We might invite some advisors along, but we look at it to see how we have fared, to see how what we've done during this journey of our life on Earth. And I think this is talking about the life review, now is a time to get it right. You know, I'd hate to go back and think during the great virus pandemic that I treated people dreadfully, that I shrank from my humanity, that I refused to reach out in love and to help people. And I think that's something for people to consider at this time when they are averting their gaze and shrinking into themselves and refusing to say hello, even at the regulation distance where no harm can come to them. I think they should be thinking, let's reach out, let's be warm, let's be friendly, let's be loving, let's recognize the God in each other, let's be spiritual.
Right, even a smile, you know, just smile.
Yeah, a smile, yeah, yeah. There's nothing more infectious than a smile.
Exactly.
It's a good infection.
Well, you know, here in a good news is that more people are going out and adopting animals during this shutdown.
Really?
So a lot more dogs and cats and whatnot are being adopted. Because I guess people, when they're home alone, realize that it would be nice to have a companion. So there is good stuff happening in this. I'm hoping it'll shake out where people come out better for the experience.
Yes.
But, you know, when you're talking about, you just slipped my mind what we were talking about right before I said that. While people are at home. The life review. Well, here's something. Well, everybody's sitting home bored. Okay, I've done this, Michael, and I've done it a few times, okay? But I have had the luxury of living alone where I could spend 2-3 days. And what I chose to do was do my life review while I'm here, okay?
Yeah.
So I sat outside on the porch, and I started from when I was born, okay? I went through my childhood years. I went through my relationships. I went through my life changes. I tried to look for patterns, similarities. What did I learn? Where did I, you know, screw up? And it's a wonderful thing to do. And I don't know anybody else that talks about, why not try your life review now while you're still alive? So you can make sure you're building your next house the way you want it.
Yes, I do that very often. And you find sore spots, don't you? Not a subconscious level, but when you reach inwards and look at your life, you think, I've let go of that, but I haven't let go of that because it still hurts. Or that still troubles me and I need to send love to someone or to forgive someone or to forgive myself. And it's good to have that clear out every so often to look at your life and say, I don't need this anymore. I'm letting go of that. I've got the experience from it. Thank you. You know, thank you, right. Greater self. Thank you, God within. And as you say, to clear out that house for what is to come next.
Exactly. You know, a lot of people think that their life has been nothing but a series of mistakes. So yeah. I used that as a guide when I was doing this. It took me 3 days, Michael. And then I said, okay, you know, we all have these same thoughts. We're all human. What would have happened if I would have married this guy instead of that guy? Okay, would my life have been different? And I thought about three other men that had proposed to me during all the time where I was still marrying the same guy. I just didn't realize it. So I decided to track them down. And it was at least a 40-year time that I had not talked to any of them, okay? It was interesting that they all knew it was me immediately. And when they told me what their lives were, where they were living, what their lives were about, I was so grateful because I realized that I had never made a mistake. Even though I blamed myself for bad choices, they were the best choices for who I am now.
Yes, I think that's a wonderful thing to have said, Maria. I appreciate that very, very much. And other people listening to this should, because we are exactly where we're supposed to be. And if you take one brick out of that wall of our experience, then everything else crumbles and we wouldn't be at this point. So you're quite right to say to people, you haven't made mistakes. You've got to this point by realizing that certain things are good for you, certain things are bad for you. And the fact that we look back and say, oh, I did that badly, means that we have moved on from that experience and have learned from it. Otherwise, we'd still think it was the great thing to do.
Right.
So, yeah, we're building on our experience. There aren't any mistakes. We move from one experience to the next, and every experience teaches us something and brings us, if we allow it to the best place we can be.
Exactly. You know, that, and that's something that people really need to realize. And I know it's hard when they're having a hard time or they're going through something horrific. It's hard to really get that you have never made a mistake.
Yeah.
Or that everything is perfect as it is. For whatever it is you need to learn. And I know a lot of people are going to say, well, why would I choose this or choose that? For experience, that's the whole answer. For experience, who knows? You know, you might be a person who's experiencing, say, cancer. And it might be because your soul's travels here wants to experience the very worst. So when you're on the other side, you can be of some value to people who might be going through that while they're still here. If you choose to.
And also your experience whilst here, if it's a seemingly negative experience, you will be teaching some people and you'll be affecting other people by your very experience. So you come here in love and you interact with the people around you. And they grow too because of your personal experiences. So nothing is wasted.
Exactly. You know, because people have asked for so many years, you know, why would somebody come in and choose, say, Down syndrome or somebody who is so severely, I don't know what the disease, whatever they want to call it, but almost in a vegetable state. Why would you choose that? But I've been around people, my own nephew, my own nieces, who were basically incommunicative. But I saw the gift that it gave to everyone around them. By the way, everyone around them got to love and take care of them.
Yes. And also that person is free as a spirit, as we mentioned earlier in the show, to travel at night and to travel at times when they are not conscious to this world. So they are still free as a spirit. And also they are drawing on past karmic experiences too. Because when we choose to come back here, the vibrations that are inherent in our vibrational signature draw to us those vibrations seemingly from the past, but it's actually the eternal present, where we have unfinished business. So sometimes we are underlining unfinished business and putting a full stop, a full point at the end of it. And it's inevitable because we come here and we draw from the vibrational field around us that which we have done in the past. Which I guess is another reason not to come back.
Right. Don't come back. Never come back.
Don't come back.
You know, at the beginning of the show, before you and I were on air, we were talking, and you said something pretty funny, but also it's a damn good question. Why did we choose to come here now?
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, for me, it's very clear, you know. It doesn't mean whether I have to like it or not. But I truly do believe that I came here to witness, to record, to take this knowledge of everything I've done in all my life, not just on air or on the radio, to other planets, other planes, all my other houses where my other people are, and tell them stories of what happened here to make sure it's never repeated anywhere else.
Make sure they don't do it.
Right.
I came here to do the job that I'm doing, you know. I remember my spiritual teacher saying, once you put your feet on this path, on these tracks, you can't take them off. And I willingly put them on,
right.
And I can't take them off.
Exactly.
And there have been times in life when I was much younger where I tried for a little while to come off the tracks, and I was placed back on them by my greater self, saying, no, this is why you came here. This is what you have to do. Don't complain about it. You agreed to do it, you know.
I
think somewhere in my spiritual trunk under the bed, there is a short straw.
Well, I wasn't laughing at you. I was laughing because I did the same thing. You know, I didn't want this. I certainly did not want this. I said, even when I started doing radio, I was happy just doing, you know, mindless stuff. And when Spirit told me where my radio had to go, I said, no, I don't want to do it. So I used to actually say it on my show. I was dragged, kicking and screaming into this. You know, I wanted to be like everybody else, just have a normal life, worry about yourself, get your bills paid, drive a nice car, and you know, be what they call normal. And I tried to put that, pardon me stealing your title, I tried to put the space between. But but there was no getting away from it. It was like the more I tried not to, the more it just kept coming to my face. So then, you know, at some point you have to say, you know, that's it, I surrender. I surrender. Yeah. If this is what I'm here to do, then I'm just going to do it.
Of course, we're surrendering to ourselves because this is what we decided to do. We're surrendering to our greater knowledge, to the sum of all our experiences. And at that point, there's no problem. It's only from the viewpoint of the little self that we think, oh my gosh.
Right. I mean, even to the point that I remember when my kids were little, they actually used to tell me, we wish we had a normal mother like everybody else. Okay, so to them, I wasn't normal, because I always knew what they were up to, you know. I had a strong connection to the spirit world. So I would get messages, you know, just practical messages, like if they were trying to skip school or whatever. And then, of course, I'd go out, track them down, and they weren't happy about it. but I said, well, this is the mother you chose, so you stuck with me. The good thing is now that they're fully grown, they're super appreciative that I'm their mother. They said when they were younger, you know, they used to question it, my daughter especially. She says, but now I'm so glad that you were my mother instead of any of your sisters. So even though she used to worship her aunts, she realized that I gave her what she needed more. Yeah. But hey, you know, it only took 40 years to hear that. So listen, everybody out there, if you wait long enough, all things come to pass.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So one last thing. You talked about sending light to the virus. Now, what I've been doing since this started, because I understand that even the virus is a living thing.
Absolutely.
And sometimes you can't interfere with a living thing. Like even if, you know, there are fires, fire is a living thing also. So I ask permission to the fire before I ask it, you know, if it's possible, can you please stop? Okay.
Yes.
What I've been doing is when I send out my long distance Reiki at night, and I've been doing this for 2 months, I specifically send it to the virus. And I ask it to transform into something beautiful. And then I visualize it turning into, and I don't know why, little beautiful purple butterflies.
Yeah. I'd be doing exactly the same thing, exactly the same thing. And politely and respectfully asking it not to do any more harm to us. to live in harmony with us and to live as perhaps a less virulent form of itself. But also I've been sending love to the diva, because the virus is created, of course, by divic activity, and saying to the diva, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry for what we've done to the earth, and I'm sorry for what we've done to you, and we do realize what we've done to you. And, you know, if you wouldn't mind, it would be great if this could pass, and we will attempt to get it right this time. And to apologize to the diva, and to send love to the diva, love to the virus, love to the situation, and love to all those people who are suffering with the virus.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And you know, because some of them will pass with it, many of them won't. But to ease whatever changes are going to come to them as a result of having contracted the virus.
Right.
And to see them as being either well or being happy in their next experience of life as they move on.
Right. And I feel that some people have actually changed their soul contract to leave earlier. And they're going to use this as their exit. So I send it out, you know, to any of them that are willing to accept the healing as they transition. And you know,
that was confirmed. What you've just said, Maria, was confirmed by a conversation I had with a member of the Soul Group this last weekend.
Oh.
Yeah, that many have decided that this is the time they wanted to go anyway. Now, that sounds a terrible thing to say, but that's what was said. And it was also said that those people are perfectly all right. They're perfectly all right. And I was shown a vision of many of the people that have passed over looking young and vital and strong and happy. You know,
right?
And my one of our partners, David, in the Band of Light, his father passed on Christmas Day due to a house fire. He didn't die in the house fire. He died as a result of smoke inhalation. And he came through a few weeks later and said, "The first thing you notice on this side is that all the worry has gone." And it was so blissful just to be able to get rid of that worry and to see things from a different viewpoint. And that must be wonderful. All those worries we've dragged with us across life and
right.
felt were so important just disappear.
I know, how wonderful is that? You know, a while back I had done a show, and this woman wrote a really good book on why worry. I think that was the name of it. And she made the fact is 80% of what we worry about never happens.
Absolutely.
So, you know, why worry? Want me worry, as Alfred E. Newman would say.
Yes. That takes me back.
Me too. Want me worry. Or don't worry, be happy. Anyway, Michael, thank you so much for this today, because I think this is what everybody needs to hear. Some sensibility, some spirituality, something to, you know, remind them of who and what we are. And to stay out of the fear.
Great place, Maria, as always.
Absolutely. Well, you take good care, Michael, and we'll talk again soon.
Much love to you and to all your listeners, Maria. Take care.
You too. Bye. Michael.
Bye.
Michael Rakia. Check him out at josephspeaks.com. His latest book, The Spaces Between. But at this point in time, I'm going to remind everybody, I would recommend you get his book, Your Life After Death, and get past whatever you're afraid of. Anyway, thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with the news, whether we want to hear it or not. You still have to know what's going on. And I appreciate each and every one of you.
Thank you for listening and supporting The Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.